Hello, Warwick. Hello, listeners.
Hello, Nicole. Hello, listeners. Are we ready? Strap yourselves in, listeners.
I have a listener joke today, actually.
Ooh, well, this could go one of several ways, actually.
Well, I won't preface it by giving you my thoughts, but this actually came from the children of one of our clients. That might give you a heads up. So
Well, at
hopefully those
least
children
it'll
get
be
to listen.
family rated.
Yeah, we better keep the rest of this episode G-rated so the kids can listen to their joke, making it onto the podcast.
Righto, let's go.
Why do gardeners have wet trousers?
I thought you said this was going to be G-rated. Don't know.
Because they're always soiling their plants.
Oh. G'day, I'm Woz.
And I'm Nick, sometimes Coxie, mostly Nick.
This is the Tradies in Business podcast, and we're here to share a bunch of tips, ideas, tactics that you can put in place to get change happening in your trade business right now.
If you're really lucky, we're going to entertain you with a few mum jokes, and more importantly, a bunch of fantastic guests that will educate you in all things you need to know about trade business, but we do promise to do it with a whole bunch of fun along the way.
I'm a self-confessed idiot, so strap yourself in and enjoy another episode. Oh, it's definitely, see, that's like the kids movies where
Yeah.
there's all the adult jokes in the scripting that only the adults get, but I think a lot of the kids get them too. It's like they're flying pretty close to the wind with some of that stuff.
Oh, I think they're getting them younger and younger too. Like I can remember the good old days when my kids were little and we were watching things like Teletubbies. There wasn't a lot of adult humor in Teletubbies or nowadays, everyone's got Bluey, which made a debut on the podcast recently. I think there's a
Yes.
fair bit of joking in there for adults, is there not?
Yeah, absolutely. That's an adult show, isn't
I don't know
it?
because I only watch it if I go to the pub.
All right. Well, I don't know. Bluey, are we speaking of Bluey today? Not really. Although he probably watches a few episodes of Bluey, I reckon.
Yes, and about to watch a whole bunch more, or at least secure himself in for a couple of years more of Bluey.
Oh, yeah. Be buying the box set. So we're joined by a real tradie, I think. Well, he used to be. And one of our tradiepreneur members, Scott Wrigley. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you very much, wasn't Nick? Thanks for having me.
Oh, you almost brought out the Elvis there,
Yeah,
Scott.
I can go show you my Elvis framed thing that I bought at a charity auction for the office.
that's
Office expense.
Oh dear. I think everyone with an office has one of those things hanging on the wall that cost way too much money, but it was all for a good cause.
It's a donation.
I got stuck in the silent auction, so I actually ended up with five different things.
They're not very silent, really, are they? Everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And did you consume alcohol before you put your bids down?
Not enough.
Because I often think that's a mistake. Everyone gets all happy and they feel very charitable, and they ply you with alcohol, and then you go around and write your bids down on stuff that you just don't like. You just don't need it. Why would you have it? Well, maybe you're an Elvis fan, Scott. I'm not sure,
No,
mate.
exactly right. No, we just expanded the office and needed some stuff on the wall so they just weren't naked white walls and yeah. Well, no, it'll be all right. I'll get outbidded. This is no worries. And yeah,
Oops.
only five.
I'm laughing, and yet I too have made a similar mistake. It would appear that if you give me a paddle and the opportunity to bid on something, I'm very aggressive. It might be the only time in my life I'm aggressive. And I own a Queensland jersey. I'm not even a Queensland supporter. Signed by, I don't know, did they, what was the last run in their wins? Was it 6 or 7 years they ran in?
Really doesn't matter.
Oh, no. I bought the jersey for that. That sits in a cupboard somewhere and probably won't ever grace my walls.
That's right. That's right. Well, I don't think you're going to have your name on a jersey, Scott, but you do have your name on the door of a business. And yeah, interesting chatting with you today because I guess, when we think about tradies, we think plumbers and sparkies and builders and maybe beyond that to landscapers and even motor mechanics. We have some automotive people that probably listen to the show and have been clients at one time or another. You're a building certifier, Scott.
Yeah, so the real sort of white collar side of a blue collar industry.
A white collar,
So
blue collar worker.
yeah. So it is interesting. And you're right, we do very much get overlooked as part of the industry or a very important piece of the puzzle that makes up the whole, you know, sort of construction industry and requirements. So, yeah, it's not too bad. We don't mind sort of flying under the radar as much as we can, but certainly make our presence known when and if needed.
So, Scott, who the hell are you, mate?
I think first and foremost is I'm a dad and then business owner with a little bit of things mixed in between. So, yeah, as Nick alluded to earlier, I'm about to welcome baby number two. So very excited about that and sort of shitting myself on working out how business is going to run with two young kids. But, no, really looking forward to it. So I think when it comes down to it, at the crux of it, I'm a tradie, always wanted to do something with my hands, very much into the construction, wanting to figure out how things are built, how things are work out. You won't get me in behind a public servant desk ever. So switching from building it and on the tools to being still in the industry was definitely something that I needed to do when I decided to make that change.
I think it is really important to note because pretty rare I felt that you were a builder beforehand.
Mm. Yeah, there's not many of us that are like that. You know, a lot of people just straight away think, okay, well, I'll go to uni or go to TAFE and learn it from a book and then start telling these guys I've been doing it for 30, 50 years how to do it. So, yeah, certainly I think that sets me aside in our industry here is that I've been there, I've done that, and I know what it takes to actually build. Certainly I would not want to jump back on the tools now. I think the guys out there would have it over me definitely with their speed and skill now. But, yeah, it definitely does help with knowing what it is that we're actually going out there and approving.
Scott, the transition from builder to building certifier, what was that like for you?
That was a hard decision. But with saying that, made very easy with a couple of things. I actually busted my shoulder playing sport of all things, so nothing to do with the work. But it made it very clear to me that I then wasn't going to be in the industry when I'm 50. So, you know, needed to make a decision for myself and the career progression that I wanted to. And then it was also financial as well at that time, trying to get a home loan to build my first house. And as a subbie, thought I was doing all the right things with writing every single thing off and quickly realizing that when it comes to banks trying to give you money, they only look at what's on paper, and didn't matter what I told them what I actually earned, they only looked at what was on paper. So, yeah, it was definitely both a future progression, both to get me into the property market and doing my own thing and investing, but also career longevity as well.
So how have you found, I guess, the customer response to you being different, you know, as a builder or even a subbie? I guess, you know, there's a perception of you as a tradesperson versus now as a shiny bum, as my dad used to refer to us, as in an office, you know, polishing a chair.
Yep.
How have you found the different perception of customers?
Question. Mixed bag. You know, we still, as a hard and fast, you know, lifer, tradie or builder, you know, we're still seen as very much the enemy, or, you know, those relationships are sort of softened with over time and building relationships with the right people and them understanding our role and themselves wanting to do the right job. But as a client, yeah, it's still certainly in the ACT a bit of a unknown as to actually why am I paying this person that we hardly ever see in the construction, you know, primarily because everything's electronic these days. And then during construction, we're only dealing with a builder. It's only really sort of emails and signatures on a piece of paper that we sort of see from a client. So they sort of, yeah, mixed understanding as to what we actually do, but it's not until we explain to them that we are actually engaged and theoretically employed by them to make sure that the build of their dream is done both compliant and to all sort of legislation and building codes.
Scott, I wonder the transition from builder to building certifier, going through that journey, did that help at all when you went from, I guess, I don't think I've actually even ever asked this question. I have presumed that you spent some years working as a building certifier for someone else and then made the transition to business owner.
Correct. Yeah. So I suppose the backstory is I went from an apprentice carpenter, left year 12 early with my certificate because I knew that building was what I wanted to do. School wasn't for me at that time. So started my carpentry apprenticeship. And then I suppose as most carpenters do, just move straight into the builder's license and just see that as the next progression. But then realised, yeah, like I said before, that I needed down tools. So there was a period in which I then needed to go back to study and having a trade qualification behind me certainly helped in the earlier years of that tertiary education with some RPLs. I was able to finally get that theoretical study underway. I was very fortunate and was picked up a job immediately with another certification company to undertake a traineeship where they helped me with those tertiary qualifications and cool experience. And then there was a opportunity where I managed to go out on my own, first of all in a business partnership, and then very quickly bought that partner out, thinking that I was never going to be a business owner or certainly business owner so quickly. And then so it's been a bit of a learning while I've been doing it, and definitely jumped from the fire to the frying pan a few times. But it's been a really good experience, and knowing exactly sort of having that trade background behind me and being able to express or understand the theoretical part of building compliance with then my personal experience knowing practically then how that's going to work out on site or how we can do things. Because it's very easy to draw a house on a piece of paper, but when it comes time to building it or an extension, you know, things can come out of the woodwork, and it's about how we practically navigate those on site. So that understanding is very much useful and sets us aside.
Scott, you've just drawn up my soapbox. I'm ready to get all ranty. And that's not very fair. I guess I just want to draw the practicality. So I often speak from the viewpoint of a builder and how we come into the equation or the conversation with a client for most builders at a very precarious stage. They've sat with an architect and the architect has drawn the dreams with no thought or consideration given to any budgetary requirements for the end client. Yep. And so then as a builder, I'm coming in and saying, well, that plan that you've created is actually going to cost you three times what your budget is. We need to look more practically at what's available. And I guess from your point of view, you would have not necessarily with a client, but similar difficult conversations around compliance and how things need to be done to code, for example. And I guess maybe there'd be times where, you know, the end consumer, the client of the builder would also provide some challenging opportunities for you. That kind of, they're almost like you're walking into conversations that are guaranteed opportunities for conflict. That can be very, very challenging to navigate. And I wonder whether that was something that you found over time, the skills, desire to be able to move through those challenging conversations, or whether it's something that you were taught whilst you were at uni doing your study. How did that come for you?
Probably very much the former. It's just learn from experience, really. I personally feel that that when put in certain positions, I can certainly hold myself. And for me, it was also having the trust in myself that I knew what I was talking about. Mm. So, you know, like I said before, school wasn't for me. I didn't really believe that I was ever going to use Shakespeare anytime soon. But when it came to studying building, both in the actual builder's license or in certification, that was where my passion laid. So, you know, I really was able to work out quite quickly passion for that and knowing my understanding of the codes. So certainly that personal backing of my understanding of rules and regulations, but definitely, you know, you learn things as you go along. You know, I've been in situations where trades have stood around me on site and tried to muscle in over the top of this, you know, young building certifier and telling me how it's going to be, and they're not going to do what I'm asking them to do. To people really also wanting to have a level of gratitude and passion in their work, and more than happy for me to pick up any non-compliances that they can learn from and not do in the future. So, yeah, definitely been in some hairy sort of meetings with builders and clients, and you sort of just sit back and say, look, I'm really out of this, guys. And that's one of the key benefits of a certifier, is that we are not, when we don't get stuck into the contractual, you know, disputes between the two, as much as we can try and get dragged into these type of discussions, but we just very quickly use as best language as we can to get ourselves out of their situations. Just say, look, we're here for building compliance, not necessarily building control or quality, which you know, that's a whole other sort of topic and debate. Mm. But yeah, as long as it actually complies to our approval to building codes and standards, that's all we're there for.
Mm-hmm. Scott, I guess you've given your career progression, I suppose. You know, you left high school on the tools, figured the whole building license pathway, and then stuffed your shoulder, jumped into the cushy white collar job, you know, making tons of money without having to work at all, air conditioning, nice bars,
not a day, mate.
All that sort of stuff. What's been your take on the business journey? Because obviously we know a fair bit about you in your business as one of our Tradiepreneur members. But to be honest, probably don't know much about your backstory and your headspace around that progression. So a lot of people go into a trade business going onto the tools to do work for customers and make money, and that's about the extent of their business understanding. What's been some of the insights, perhaps, or realizations as you've gone through that journey?
Yeah, that I don't know as much as I thought I knew as business ownership, and you know, still don't. And you know, you guys as business coaches has just over the last couple of years has just exploded the opportunities and understanding as to what that is. Very fortunate in that I've got a very supportive wife who. She herself has a master's in business administration, so it was sort of the backing from her when the opportunity came up to sort of go into business out myself, and you know, family support and that sort of stuff, it sort of made that a lot easier. But I sort of fell into it with this business partner. He saw the window in the market, so to speak. He had the capital to start it up, and I had the license. So, so we sort of created that together. And then, like saying, not even a year into it, opportunity came up to buy him out completely, which was, you know, it was all very amicable, and even like just offered to me. Actually, I was just more thinking of buying more shares in the partnership, but he said, why don't you have the whole lot? So certainly learnt definitely a lot from him, being a very sort of entrepreneur sort of background himself. But definitely similar to the conflict with clients and builders is just been learning from experiences and in our sort of short years, certainly learnt a lot of different and hard learnings with staffing and different experiences, but definitely have that mindset of you have to trial it, you have to give it a go. If it doesn't work out, learn from it. You know, mistakes or failure is not the end. You know, you can just go down a different avenue and trying not to repeat history.
Good insights, mate. So when you say trying not to repeat history, can you tell us a bit more about what you mean there?
Yeah, so with some sort of staffing, mean understanding that finding the right staff is absolutely crucial to any business, and certainly a startup or someone in the growth phase. So being caught quite a few times in the, oh, we just have to hire. You know, we're swamped with work. We just need a bum on a seat. We'll work out the logistics of training, you know, as we go. And, you know, that never happens. I've had a few people sort of be untruthful in their sort of descriptions or positions and lead us down the track for a whole year in one instance before having to let them go. Another one ended up in jail, unbeknownst to me. So, so you know, it's just been a huge roller coaster on knowing the direction that we need to go to with different staffing. And then when it comes to clients, yeah, that's a whole other, you know, ball game. And certainly working with you guys closely on our increasing our A-class clients. But, you know, learning from that too. And certainly not regretful by any means as how I've gotten to today and who I've either employed or worked with, because certainly as a startup, you just take anything you've got that comes across your desk. And it's not until, you know, we're in a position where we're able to, not all the time, but pick and choose those clients and those jobs and have the processes and procedures in place from learning in history, knowing those red flags straight away before, you know, it becomes too much and we're now in this sort of debate between owed money and them demanding us to come out and do an inspection so that the construction can progress to the next stage.
Mm. Well, I wonder, so there's a progression as a business owner, and you've alluded to it quite well here already. And when we start in business, we don't know what we don't know, and it creates a specific outcome. And for most people, that specific outcome looks like working longer hours, not getting the family time, the financial rewards aren't there like you think they're not. I'd love you to identify if any of those and what they were, issues were for you in the early days, and then how that has changed. Like, what did you have to change to create a better outcome for you some years now into the business?
Yeah, okay. I think the basis is I have a burning desire to prove people wrong. and when someone says that I can't do something or has a impression on my abilities, I very much like to rub their face in the fact that I've been able to achieve something. So certainly family time at the start was very, very hard and certainly took a back seat for a lot of years. And, you know, that's in reflection, that's certainly something that's on me and you know, trying to rectify, and especially with number two coming along, not something that I want to do. But, you know, yeah, the wife and I were having a chat about that upcoming date and reflecting on 4 years ago when in the delivery suite I was on the phone to a client, you know, who was demanding a building approval to be issued, and they knew full well where I was and that was just simply not able to be done. But it was the fact that I was even on the phone to them is not something that's going to happen this time around. But it was also I suppose just dropping my wife in the deep end and heading back to work pretty much straight away after our first child was born. So definitely, yeah, family was a family life and my sort of commitment to that took a back seat. So learning that as a business owner, it doesn't have to, and it's about putting the right processes in place to make sure that, you know, we don't let that happen. Because everyone goes into business thinking that they're probably going to be the next, you know, millionaire and overnight and rattle some cages in the financial world. But it certainly doesn't have to come at a cost of either personal health or family either. So it's definitely a learning curve and something that even with a phone, you know, everything was me on the mobile for a few years. So now that I've got a really good team backing me and the right systems in place, actually having an office helps. But, you know, having an office phone, an office, an admin sort of email and staff to direct those inquiries to, so that I am not in every circumstance. Sometimes you do have to step in as the business owner and handle something, but being able to know that, okay, I've got staff to handle that. That's what I pay them for. And I can just concentrate on, you know, running the business, doing these inspections and knowing that, that things are getting done in the background that I don't need to worry about anymore.
Mm. Scott, what's been some of the big, personal lessons? A lot of business ownership for those that go on this sort of mindful path of improving and building a bit of better business. And as you talk about striking that balance between the $1 million and the family and the other priorities, a lot of it ends up being about ourselves. And anyone who's had a coach knows that that's a big part of it. What's been some of the personal realizations or changes that you've made over the last year or two?
You cannot do it alone. That is absolutely number one. So certainly in my industry, is that in Canberra being also a very sort of small certification industry, is that one man bands fail. So personally, understanding that you don't have to wear the burden entirely, sharing that around is not only going to help yourself, but going to help the clients and build. So there certainly became a period where I had a fear of growth and the unknown. So with that very amicable buyout from my old business partner, I was able to stay in his office, but only had the one desk in the corner. So it very quickly came a point where I needed to think of expanding and having that help, which then meant leaving the office and, you know, putting my big boy pants on and stepping out into the world on my own and trying to do it. So yeah, certainly knowing that you can do it, and it's about giving it a go and taking that leap. And as much as it needs to be calculated, and not going sort of too much above your head or biting off too much that you can at the one time, it's sort of knowing that there are, you know, services or people like yourselves to guide business owners through. And that's, you know, been the one biggest thing. Again, hats off to my wife who said, okay, Scott, enough's enough. We need some business coaches. And she did the research and found you guys. So it's knowing that, yeah, you don't have to try and figure it out yourself. There are a lot more smarter people than yourselves and yourself to be able to figure that out and to help guide you through business and the nitty gritty of actually what it means to be or what it takes to be business ownership.
Mm.
Scott, can we talk about coaching for a second? Because I don't think we've asked some of these direct questions I'd really like to ask you. So there'll be lots of people listening to this podcast that have been listening for 5, maybe even the 10 years it's been running, who are here because they understand and know that they need some help and they're not necessarily taking that next step. And for many of them, it comes through a fear of one sort or another. I wonder for you, your process, how this worked for you when you were thinking about, okay, getting some help. You had a great supportive wife who helped you with the research, but there must be some bits that, you know, really made you stop and think, okay, I feel uncomfortable with this, or I'm frightened of this. Was there anything that you can remember that you could clearly identify?
It was very much a very sort of surreal point where I needed to just take some time out and really and quite honestly, you know, have a look at myself. as a person, what I thought was a business owner. And you know, we at the time, as just a husband. So it was a point where I just really needed to look and understand, okay, what am I doing? Am I going to actually do this? Am I going to try and make something out of this? Or am I going to just try and either lie to myself or just, you know, bluff through trying to make this work? So a family friend of ours who has multiple or has had multiple businesses, made it very successful as a entrepreneur, and knows sort of the ins and outs of making that sort of success happen. Yeah, sat me down many years ago and just said, stop thinking you're the smartest person in the room. Understand that there are people out there that know more than you in their fields. You know, I think that as a certifier, it's my job and my role to know more than the client or the builder in building regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people like business coaches, and, you know, it's certainly something that made me want to say to Alex, my wife, yeah, let's hit on this. Let's do it. And not to try and win the Creativepreneur of the month, but it's certainly been the best decision, best decision that we've ever made, because it's been an opportunity in which it has been a very fast learning curve into what you said before, Nick, what we didn't know. Mm. And yeah, it's been able to open up a lot of opportunities. You know, we can touch on the fact that our turnover has more than doubled since starting with you guys. We've increased staff. You know, our was as, you know, best sort of love child is, you know, systems and processes. And you know, the fact that we've got some of those in place, certainly not going to sit here and vouch that we're the best and we're absolutely killing it. You know, there's still very much learning, but I think in a short period of time, knowing and learning from people who, I suppose, putting it frankly, is their job to know businesses and the secrets of that. And I was listening to just one of your pods earlier today, and was, you were saying, you know, does your head in that you've bang on to listeners for umpteen years and yet they're not doing the very small little things. Certainly that's what we're trying to do and seeing real results from it.
Mm.
Scott, can you explain to us what the journey has been like for you? Because I think the other part of this is they don't know what they don't know. And often that is about business coaching as well. And I can tell our listeners till I'm blue in the face what my experience of business coaching is. And it's very different to what yours is. And I think there's some benefit for them to hear what that experience is like. And this isn't about advocating for tradies and business, although of course I obviously do.
Bugger off. We're trying to get people to join the program, Coxie.
There are lots of coaches out there and it's very much, you got to find the right people that you got the right vibe with. I think that's probably the first and foremost thing to be checking for. But Scott, I want to hear from your point of view. What is business coaching for you?
Sure. A relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, a relationship in which it's not just, oh, you know, yeah, you're doing a good job, mate. Keep going. You know, everything's Jeez, you know, yeah, everything's sunshine and daisies. It's all fine. It's about giving some honest feedback and some hard truths at times and when needed. And I suppose if you can't take that, then stop being a business owner, because you're going to get a lot more honest and harder feedback from clients or staff than you are probably from a business coach. So it's about putting your guard down as well. And that's been a big thing for me as well. Certainly can be very stubborn at times and thinking that, no, bugger off. It's my show. I know what the I know what the go is here. So it's about learning from people that, I think I said before, that are a lot smarter than you, And yeah, I suppose understanding that it's, I'm just trying to use the right terminology here. It's about knowing how to give the trust to coaches when, you know, you've reached out to them for a reason. So it's a, you know, your want, you've made the choice to grow or to get better at something in your business. So take the damn advice.
That's a good one. I just really want to dispel a myth here. I don't think Warwick and I are smarter than anyone. I was just going to be really mean and say it's Warwick. I think it's like you as a certifier. You know everything that you need to know to do your job really well. And a builder knows everything they need to know to build the house really well. And we know everything we need to know to help people run their businesses. I don't want somebody who's sitting at home listening to this or perhaps working away and listening to think that we feel like we're smarter. We're definitely not. We just know different things than you do and can help you with this part of your journey. Warwick's pretty brainy, but, you know, to say he's smarter than Scott, that's probably stretching it. Just
that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, we do wear glasses, but I think beyond that, it's about the end of the similarities.
Yeah. Well, we're all, you know, self-appointed experts in our own fields.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's, I might know, you know, some things about business and learning from experiences, but it's been certainly something that needed to know a lot more, you know, and the way in which Alex and I use you guys, or one of the reasons is a bit of that, that third person's point of view. That's Switzerland, you know, going in, being in business with your wife can certainly cause, you know, a lot of arguments and a lot of headaches and there's just no getting, you know, away from it. You know, you obviously, yeah, you live with them, you got kids with them. And if you work with them, there's little to no sort of free time or other point of views. So it's certainly reaching out and using coaches, using you guys as that point of difference. You know, we're very much sort of clouded with the business and where we want to take things or decisions that we need to make. And yeah, we do it regularly. Reach out to you guys and you either say, you both are dickheads. No, that's not the answer. or you know, it's a bit of, you know, you take a bit of both sides of the story. So yeah, it's certainly learning from that as well.
Just having that outside perspective. And I think that's the difference between, not to labor the point about being smarter or just actually having the advantage of standing outside of everything. Same way you do as a certifier, you know, you're standing back looking at a project from a particular point of view, whereas the person on the ground, the builder, for example, is in it. It's harder for them to see those things that need to be paid attention to that can make a big difference to the project. You know, I think one of the fantastic things about a coach, and Nicole and I have a coach, we're part of a program as well, is that it shines the light on our business and what we're doing from a different angle and allows us to see things differently because of someone else's perspective. Scott, I just want to talk about fear. And I know we're talking a lot about, I guess, the opportunity for our listeners to, whether it's a coach, a mentor, whether it's, you know, done through some networking group where you get feedback from other business people. It doesn't have to be the Tradiepreneur program, obviously. Nicole and I believe emphatically in what we do. I'd be a bit worried for any of our clients if we didn't.
Sure.
But there seems to be a couple things for me. There's fear around change and allowing someone in, like you were saying, Scott. And then there's also this problem where people are already busy. They're already overwhelmed. They've already got a lot on their plate. And doing some sort of coaching or mentoring just feels like more work and something else that needs to be attended to, and almost looks like more stress rather than less. What's been your experience with that, Scott?
Certainly a bit of a change to how I do things. Definitely, yeah, at the start, it was very much, oh, no, I can't. I've got no time for this. What are you, like, there's no way. And over time, sort of letting that guard down and knowing, okay, well, actually, for me to be successful and for me to, you know, have this business, make it profitable, have the cash and use that to have life experiences or do things personally with my family, you've got to understand that you've got to be able to make time to work on the business. If you're not going, if you're just stuck in with your head against the grindstone day in, day out, you know, not thinking that you can't even catch a breath because it's so busy, you've got to try and work out a way in which you do come up for breath once or twice, and that being, you know, an opportunity to work on the business. But even socially, you know, every fortnight I catch up with a bunch of guys, go out for dinner, who are all business owners, and, you know, yeah, we in a sense work together as well, but it's a great opportunity socially to just head out. And every single fortnight, conversations always end up around jobs that we're doing together or you know, different things. You know, one's a father and son team where the dad's sort of getting the son set up to take over one day, and it's just really just sort of getting into his ear now. You it's systems and processes. It's getting it set up right, and it's just, if no one thinks, or if you know, listeners are thinking, no, I don't have time for coaches and time out of my weekday to do it, I'm sure they're catching up with mates for a drink or dinner or something, where it's even just chatting socially with your mates about, even if they're not in business, but just general chat can really, as we were saying before, have different perspectives. And we bounce things off each other all the time.
It's about being open to feedback and being willing to take it as information rather than a personal attack or a suggestion that, you know, I'm shit because I didn't do it right for the last 15 years. It's just information. You know, we anybody who plays sport has a coach, and if they don't, they probably wish they did. And lots of us, even in individual sports, have paid for coaching or tried to get tips from an A-grade player. It's like, hey, what do you think about this? Or how do you, you know, what sort of shots are you setting up here? We're constantly looking for ways to improve. And yet this whole thing about business, whether it's because it's to do with money or ego or what we invest personally into how we do things, I think there's a lot of fear and resistance around external feedback.
Yeah, definitely fear's that big word there. And so as soon as you can get over the fear of reaching out, and taking that feedback, as you were saying, as actual feedback, not criticism, you know, we're not out there bashing each other with a stick to say, oh, my business is better, what are you doing? It's learning from different experiences, you know, different scenarios that someone might be having. You can easily relate that to something that you've either gone through and pick up little tips along the way.
Love it, Scott. So here you go, mate. If you had 1,000 tradies in a room, trade business owners, let's make it on topic, on brand here. You had 1,000 trade business owners in a room. What's one piece of advice you would love to leave them with, mate?
I think we've sort of hit on it this whole podcast by what it sounds like, but trade business owners is don't think you're the smartest person in the room. There are people out there that you can engage with either in a professional manner or a social manner, any ways that you can, to just to learn from people, engage with people, engage with services like a business coach, and you know, there are, I'm sure the guy who owns Amazon either does or had a business coach at the very start. So yeah, we can all learn from someone smarter than us.
Love it, mate. The check is in the mail, as they say, Scott. Well, mate, thanks for jumping on the show with us. It's been fantastic working with you and your lovely wife. And it's been fantastic to see the changes that you've both implemented, and especially you, mate. I think it's seems to be particularly challenging for the blokes to accept that outside feedback and be willing to see it as just that. It's information. It's a bunch of tools that they can use to get better results for them and their families. So big ups to you, Scott, for being willing to make the change and opening yourself up to that critical feedback. And well done on doing what your wife told you to do, mate.
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah. You can just edit that last part out, mate.
No.
She's gonna put that on repeat, mate, on Spotify. It's just over and over and over.
Yeah. No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation to jump on the podcast, guys. It's been unreal and a very fun journey. And yeah, still can't wait to what tomorrow brings.
We'll play this back to you in another 12 months, mate. And you can chuckle about all the things you've achieved since you did the episode.
Sounds like a plan.
Nice. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.